Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Elkon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm science-based advice columnist and author Amy Elkon, also known as the Advice Goddess.
And I'm the animal behaviorist and author Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
This is our every other week show on which we lay out science news you can use to solve your relationship problems or just improve your relationships and have a better life. And on the weeks in between, I will still be doing shows on the best behavioral science books. So, Jen.
I wanted to introduce the show by talking a little bit about an experience I had 7 years ago. I was involved in a near-fatal car accident, and remarkably, I came out of it physically unscathed, but psychologically, I was a little bit like Humpty Dumpty. And for a long time after the accident, I saw threats everywhere, or I should say my brain actually perceived danger everywhere. I would react unreasonably to seemingly harmless situations, because somewhere deep in the recesses of my brain, there was this perception that I was in imminent danger. Where there was possible risk of injury, I overreacted. And this usually left me paralyzed with fear. In essence, because of my trauma, I wasn't able to discern the difference between perceived risk and actual risk. My body's fight or flight system was totally activated and, frankly, on overload. And I wasn't able to move forward past the trauma and accurately assess risk. You might be wondering, what does this have to do with heartbreak? Well, when we experience heartbreak in our relationships, for some of us, this can be so traumatic that it overactivates our fight or flight system and gets in the way of developing happier relationships with new people. So tonight, we are going to explore what happens when we experience heartbreak, why our responses may be adaptive, and how we can heal from these experiences and move forward, opening our hearts again to someone new.
Wow, Jennifer, it's really great you would share the story about your car accident, because I think that this is a common thing that happens to people, more common than we know, about physical and emotional getting kind of confused. And actually, mm-hmm. What's interesting to me is how bodily threat and emotional threat were running basically on the same set of train tracks. And actually, I've been reading a lot about this lately, and emotional pain and physical pain, they actually have a lot in common. So, and actually what we don't really realize, they are both useful. They're both adaptive, we say. And yes, mm-hmm. even painful emotions. And that compares with the pain of, like, say you put your hand on a hot stove. That pain is really useful. It says, hey, idiot, smell any flesh burning? Move your damn hand. So emotions, they're the same. They're motivational tools. Same as right. the smell of flesh burning and that pain in your hand. So they're telling us what to do next or what to stop doing now. And so for a long time, people looked at the mind and body as separate, but really there's so much evidence that they work cooperatively. And there's research from the Netherlands that found that social rejection affects the autonomic nervous system. I remember this as the automatic mm-hmm. nervous system because
right.
It's involuntary stuff like your digestive system, your heart rate, your breathing. It's not like, you're controlling it so consciously. And so these Dutch researchers, I can't say the first guy's first name, is Dr. Moore, that's his last name, and his colleagues, they found that social rejection actually caused a person's heart rate to drop. So this slows you down. So in other words, mm-hmm. rejection is telling you not just in your head, but in your body, look, this is a lost cause. Sit down, lick your wounds. It's basically, I see it as emotional traffic directing.
I love that analogy. And it's almost like, hey, let's take a step back and assess the situation. Because sometimes if the rejection and betrayal is sudden enough or traumatic enough, though, it can actually have the opposite reaction. And your emotional traffic directing system gets overtaken by your fight or flight system response, which is not to slow down, but actually to speed up. And the fight or flight system is actually part of this autonomic or automatic nervous system. And for some people, the result is even that it's so stressful that the heart muscle can be permanently damaged. And researchers call this broken heart syndrome. So we tend to think that, oh, it's just a saying that I have a broken heart. But in reality, for a small portion of people, it is rare overall. They actually do experience damage in their heart, and it can be life-threatening, even though most people do recover, even though the heart won't recover fully.
Wow, that's pretty scary. And actually, we will have later in the show some tips to avoid going into panic mode. But first, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about resilience. So we have this idea that if you aren't just destroyed by somebody leaving you in your relationship or by somebody dying, that you didn't really love them. And this is, number one, insulting. And number two, just not true. And so I had a question. My advice column, this guy wrote in, his girlfriend had died in a car crash. I think it was like 4 months before he wrote to me, three or 4 months. Friends were concerned about him because, you know, they thought he loved her, he seemed to love her, that he should be grieving, you know, this big showy way, you know, like sleeping on the front lawn and, you know, never stopping crying. And the guy started to actually worry, it's so horrible that he wasn't grieving right. So horrible. Right. And he said he had really loved her and he was broken up at first and he was hysterical and he still misses her. But he said, I have a quote, "Despite what's happened, I still like my life and my job. I even find myself laughing at stupid stuff." Now, poor guy, his friends were seeing this as some kind of like horrible pathology, but actually it does not point to a problem. It points to resilience. And I like this guy, grief researcher named George Bonanno. And he says that resilience is actually the norm in people whose loved one dies. And he says we have this distorted idea of how we process loss and especially death. And actually, it's because the people writing about grief are largely therapists who are the ones who get the people who can't get over a loss, which is very few people. And so he says that grief is something we're actually wired for, and it's not something that's meant to overwhelm us, which is why most people manage after, you know, they have some sadness, the guy's crying all over the place, some wound licking, to regain their equilibrium and then go on with their lives.
Absolutely. And I think you're right that sometimes people look at someone and they say, you're not grieving properly, or it's just, it doesn't look like we think it's supposed to, you're supposed to collapse and fall apart. But like you said, this is not really the norm for people. We're resilient. And it's also true for animals. Animals experience extreme grief, especially those that develop intense social bonds like elephants, or those that mate for life like swans and geese. And some individuals, I think just like in humans, some individual animals are more resilient than others. But what is universally true is that most do go on to live their lives and develop new relationships. And, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think in animals that they feel guilty about this. You know, like some people, when they laugh at something silly or they enjoy a meal again, they feel somehow guilty that they're enjoying their life because they're supposed to be in grief. You know, and not everyone, though, is as resilient. And recently, there was a pretty sad situation at the Limpopo Zoo, which is in Russia. And the life partner of a mute swan named Gavidon was killed by a zoo visitor. They actually put a needle into a piece of bread.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and his mate, she died. And in response to losing his mate, because mute swans mate for life, he began not eating and he socially isolated himself from other birds. And unfortunately, this led to his death within 3 months. So he was not one of the most resilient of the mute swans.
Wow, that's horrible. I didn't know that there's a whole, you know, there are a whole bunch of mute swans. I thought he was just maybe throwing some kind of tantrum.
No, and in fact, and geese too. So in these particular species where they form lifelong partnerships, this is where after losing their mate, some, not all, obviously, or we wouldn't have that many geese or swans around, can't cope with losing their life partner.
I thought, you know, I was just thinking, mute partners. God, a lot of people would probably like that. To stay on topic, I'm going to talk about social support. You know, that emotions, they're also a signal to other people. So if you're crying, you evoke empathy in others. And this is sometimes defined as fellow feeling, but I like the German word for empathy, Einfühlung. which is feeling in. I love saying those German words. Feeling into another person. And Adam Smith, the economist a few centuries back, wrote about sympathy as a motivator. And it's about, you know, other people's concerns mattering to us. And he was right that when we feel sympathy for someone else, that their concerns become our concerns. So just sensing what somebody's going through, we want to help. So that's how emotions can be a social tool as well, to draw people to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll never forget a video I saw of an emperor penguin mom who was crying and squealing over the body of her dead chick. And she was trying desperately to roll her chick onto her feet because that's where they keep them, of course, because they live in very cold weather. So they keep their chicks warm on their feet. And she just was unwilling to really accept that it had died. And in response to this mom's distress, which they're social, they live in colonies, and she was vocalizing so much that another female penguin came and comforted her by trying to place her wing around her and nuzzle her. So animals respond. Yeah, I mean, so animals even, not only do they...
You don't think of that, you think of animals in cartoons as emotional like that, but, I don't really think of, seeing people on or animals on the National Geographic Channel that way, which is my only exposure, unlike you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's true. And so animals respond to the grief of others, including the grief of people, and they provide care to their friends in need. And I think sometimes when it comes to particularly romantic relationships and their endings, I don't know that we honor people's feelings about it. We kind of have a mindset of, well, he or she was a jerk and you're just better off, or even worse, just get over it already. But when you put yourself out there and you've opened yourself up to another person, showing them your soft underbelly, if you will, and you get stomped on, how are we supposed to just get over it?
Well, actually, I think a big part of this, and maybe this sounds silly, but it's to not take it personally. People don't always understand what you need, and sometimes people mean well, but they say exactly the wrong thing. So right. This doesn't really quite explain, when somebody breaks up with you, but those people out there who don't really understand quite what to do. I have this chapter in Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck about how people respond to a friend who's revealed they have cancer. And so, I'm not that mature. We don't know what to say. And so people get all afraid and then they scan their brain for stuff, filed under cancer, and up pop, I love this, the chemo horror stories, friend had chemo and her head fell off, and, or they managed to find the upside and being ravaged by disease. That's another great one. I'd give anything to be that thin. Or the worst is that, everything happens for a reason. It's like, what, God looked at me and said, you suck, so I'm going to rub you out. And right. But the reality is, as you display with animals, you don't have to say the right thing to cancer patient. You just need to show the hell up, be there, right. Show them that you'll sit there and, just keep them company. But the thing is, sometimes we're not that good at being humans. So people need to be told what you need, whether you're in a breakup or whether you've had somebody die, So don't just think that people should figure it out psychically. Tell them what would help you, because otherwise you may just be getting all the wrong, quote unquote, help.
Well, yeah. And, I think you may not have to say the right thing, but it certainly would be helpful to avoid saying the wrong thing. And I think one of the wonderful things and beautiful things about animals is that they are just there for each other. And sometimes all you need is someone to say, this totally sucks, and I have no idea what to do or say here, but you are not alone.
Yeah, that's really great how much smarter animals are than we are. But no, I didn't really answer your question, so not totally. So you wanted to know how to get over loss, get over being stomped on, you get broken up with.
Please.
Well, one thing, because, part of it's just time, just like, okay, this sucks, right. And it sucks a little less like a month from now, and then it sucks a little less 2 months from now. But one thing you can do is to make the loss have meaning for the future. So, and this is something people don't always like to do, but to look at the ways you didn't quite look at the person, you missed things you should have seen. So we all want to believe that this is, it's love that I found, this person's great. And we work really hard to ignore things about somebody that we need to be looking at and evaluating. So basically by doing sort of, honest post-mortem, you're doing something positive for the future, saying, you know, basically, okay, yes, this went very badly. I'm going to look at why it went badly, and I'm not going to make the same mistakes the second time, which is really all you can ask of yourself.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, that's a good point. I think sometimes we just love the idea of love so much, and we ignore problems or behaviors that aren't really compatible with who we are and what we want. But the only way to find a better mate sometimes is to ditch a poorly performing mate. And you know, this is basically the wisdom according to magpies who get rid of a poorly performing mate. And in their case, poor performance means they're not pulling their weight at the nest, right? No. And so, yeah, if one partner's just not pulling their weight, they're not keeping up with the house, they're not feeding the kids, they're not sitting on the eggs, then you know, that's a poor performing mate. And when they break up, they usually do better the next time around with someone new. So it seems as if, at least in magpies, they're able to use their past relationship and how it didn't work out to avoid making the same mistakes in the future.
I love that. Lazy mofo, I'm going to leave your eggs all over the front lawn. That's kind of amazing. So, you know, the truth is, in love, I mean, we all know this, sometimes the thing you have just runs its course. So, but you really have to decide that you're going to accept the trade-off. When you have love, the desire to have love in your life comes with a trade-off, and it's that it can end, and often does end, in a painful way. So, you know, you really have to look at it that way. And then if you do, when it is painful, you can remember, like, oh yeah, I said that was okay. So you either accept the trade-off, or you decide it's worth it for you to live without love, you know, no love, no, just like friends and bowling and whatever, right. You know? And so, but there's something interesting about the pain we feel in the wake of a breakup or other social rejection. And there's research by Naomi Eisenberger, and I can't remember, there are like six other researchers. Some colleagues of hers, they found that social rejection shows up in the same pain centers in the brain as physical rejection. Mm-hmm. And here's a big tip with a health caveat that, you know, that could lead to maybe a better tip. They found that Tylenol, taken over a period, I think it was like 21 days, but who knows if it takes that long, Tylenol diminishes social pain like it does physical pain. But the problem is Tylenol, this is acetaminophen, can have very bad effects in the liver. So you could, you get over your breakup.
Especially if you like to drink too.
Right. So then maybe you meet your next boyfriend while you're getting dialysis and waiting for a liver transplant. So, but here's the thing. When I tried to find somebody who tested this with aspirin, and other researchers I've spoken to are just beginning to study this. Study isn't done. Okay. So it's very possible that aspirin might do the job. But so you could try that, you know, because aspirin's not going to hurt you, I guess, unless you have a hole in your stomach. But there is one other caveat about this, because this may be the truth with aspirin and with acetaminophen. Jeffrey Durso, and he's at Ohio State, and some colleagues, they found that acetaminophen blunts both emotional pain and emotional pleasure. So, you know, all of you out there, don't be snorting aspirin. Either, you know, and again, there's no research yet that says aspirin works like acetaminophen on social rejection, but it's possible, and I would bet it does. That's just my guess.
Right. So, well, so then some of the recommendations could be, you know, take two aspirin and find a new lover in the morning, right?
And well, I don't know if it works that fast. I'm not sure. I think these are 21 days, you know, it depends, you know, easy come, easy go.
Well, I wonder if that's how magpies get through a bad breakup, if they self-medicate with currants, which actually contains salicylic acid, which is the active ingredient in aspirin. So who knows, right? But I mean, are there, to be more serious, you know, are there any other ways to kind of get through the emotional pain of a breakup?
Well, one thing is to figure out what you need. You know, if you're an introvert, you're not going to want to be around people. You're going to want to probably be around them even less than usual. But if you're an extrovert, and I should say introverts are people who, they are easily overstimulated by social events and being around a lot of people. Extroverts are the opposite. They're fed, they're energized by being around other people. I'm one of them. And so it probably would be helpful, or maybe helpful, to be around other people. So not romantic partners right away, probably, but spend time with friends. So you aren't just sitting home alone with your sadness, because you get fed by that. You know, I had a friend show up at the cafe the other day, and, you know, we both had writing to do, but we both admitted after we talked, we just felt kind of jazzed about, I don't know, work and everything. And so that's because I'm an extrovert. So is he. So this thing of going out with your friends, you know, it may not go so great at first, but you just have to kind of accept that this isn't, these will not be the greatest social events of your life. But if you remember, you know, right. We're resilient, we're designed by evolution to heal and move on. So it's really important if you remember that and just deal with these few nights or weeks or months where things are seriously sucking, you're not enjoying it, you know, this is probably a way to, so you're not just sitting there dwelling and ruminating, which is bad.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely
a really bad thing. And and the other thing is, you know, people think like, oh, should I have therapy? And not everyone can afford a therapist. And how do you find one? And what if the first 10 you see suck? You can actually use cognitive behavioral therapy without a therapist. And it's essentially using reason to combat your emotional problems. And so, and I like to think of the crux of this, there's a Stoic philosopher, Epictetus, who said basically, I don't know, however they said it back then, it is not events that disturb us, but the views we take of them. So not events that disturb us, the same event two people experience can be felt differently about because they have different approaches to it, rational approaches. So again, same event happens to two different people and they see it in two different ways. So the heartbreak of a breakup is just one of the costs of having love in your life for one person, or it's awful and horrible, you know, and that's the stuff that cognitive therapy combats. That's Albert Ellis, who was one of the co-founders of cognitive therapy. He calls this awfulizing, which means going way broader on a problem than reason would allow. So
I love that word, awfulizing. I'm going to incorporate that into my vocabulary and say, I know I'm awfulizing this situation because it's just...
That's great. That's great because then you remember to think that way. It's really important. And as you do this more and more, you start to incorporate rational thought as your MO. And so just to tell you the rational approach to, oh my God, you know, it's horrible and awful and my life is over, which is just like, oh, come on, drama queen. the opposite is the rational approach, which is preferring that things work out with the butterflies and the birds singing and the angels tearing up about your love. They don't always work out that way, but lots of people endure heartbreak and you see that they pick themselves up and they go on. So it sucks, it hurts, but looking at it rationally, you can say, look, all these people do this. It seems that resilience is the thing. That's the common thing in humans. I too will go on.
Well, and you know what? I think that that's actually what I do. I definitely have learned from mistakes, but you know, at the same time, seriously, there can be no clear sign and you just end up with a lousy partner with no way to predict or control the outcome. And, you know, this has happened to me, I don't know how many times, and it happens to Nazca boobies all the time.
Not my boobies. My boobies are smart.
I'm sure
what kind
they
of boobies?
Are.
I'm sure this is some kind of
I'm
animal.
Sure they're boobie. Brilliant boobies, but we are talking about Nazca boobies, which is a seabird, and in these birds, actually, usually the females initiate divorce spontaneously for no apparent reason, and
bitches.
They recruit. Yeah, they just like I don't know. They woke up one day and said, "Why am I with you?" And they recruit a new male, and the two of them basically beat up and kick out the old male. So out with the old booby and in with the new booby.
No way. These are like Birdie World gang members. This is horrible.
They
violence.
Are.
Even in the birdhood.
In the birdhood, yes. But okay. But the sad thing is that the male that's getting kicked out, he's not exactly on board with this whole, the relationship is over. So he's definitely rejected and he resists it. So he's not happy about it. But eventually he will accept the situation and actually will go on and find a new life partner because unless they're getting divorced like this, Nazca boobies mate for life. And he will even settle down just a few nests down from his old partner. So they, you know, they move forward and they don't project their past bad breakup or bad relationship onto their new partner. And I think us, on the other hand, we tend to act a little bit more like squid.
Yes, I've long been admired for my resemblance to calamari. You?
Well, I don't know, but you may very well have been. You know, squid, what happens, there's some research that came out about squid that's teaching us about pain and what you were saying earlier about physical pain. I think we can think of the similarity between physical and emotional pain. Squid are a really interesting situation because they're finding that when a squid experiences a predator attack and becomes injured, physically. Their response is to become hypervigilant, right? And because of that overvigilance to potential threat, they actually survive better. And I think some of us, essentially, when we get hurt in a relationship, we act like squid and we become hypervigilant about being hurt. And this is, I think, a big problem, and it can interfere with and derail new relationships because you're acting as if there's a potential threat. You know, so I think one of the things I struggle with is, what are we supposed to do if we're the ones being hypervigilant, or if we find ourselves actually dating someone who is so gun shy about getting close to someone again?
Well, if it's you, it takes the use of reason. And so let's say you're involved with a new man. And so it is just not rational to look at him and treat him as if he is all men or the man who came before him. So you need to look at him and be very conscious of assessing him as an individual. And so this takes time and it takes effort. You have to compare the person who they say they are against their actions over time. And you have to have enough time with them that you see any little inconsistencies or red flags pop up. But what people like to do instead, you know, because it's easier and it feels good, is to say, this is it, love at first sight. And unfortunately, there's no such thing, since you have to know somebody to actually love them. But I wrote about this in a column. I said, love at first sight makes people who claim to have it sound adventuresome and enviable, as opposed to two people who know nothing about each other rushing into a relationship, which makes them sound like idiots. So the healthy thing to say, the thing that can keep you from being hurt by getting involved with somebody who's not the greatest person, is we found a lot to like about each other, but we thought we'd get to know each other before calling it anything more than, you know, like a consistently good time.
I love that, a consistently good time as opposed to love at first sight. And actually, I always say it's smell at first sight, not love at first sight. But that's a whole nother show. So, you know, I think,
oh my God.
I think the other thing for people to remember is that, you know, kind of ask yourself, what is the worst that will happen, right? So this opposite of awfulizing, basically say, okay, let's awfulize. What is the actual worst thing you can that could happen if you get close to someone new? And if you were a squid, of course, the cost is that you get eaten and you die. But I think for us, relatively speaking, you would probably not get eaten by your mate. Right? So the problem, though, is that what's going on in your brain during a breakup is overacting for some people, that fight or flight system. And this is also the very same part of the brain that's involved in forming deep social, emotional, and trusting type of relationships. And so when people try to develop a new relationship with someone else, we can overreact and our fight or flight system acts like we might die, which is very squid-like.
Well, I am not a squid. And as a human, another important thing you can do is, you know, when you're even just like dating, look, go in with a set of values. It's the must-haves in a partner. I've talked about this before, the minimum stuff you can't live without. So it's the stuff that you can't live without. And for me, ethics is a biggie. You know, you have to go into dating with this list, like ethics and whatever else you need, tall, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just what works for you, what you can't. If you can't have a guy who's like the size of a coffee table, make tall one of the things. So then when you meet the person who makes your knees turn to wet pasta, you know, you can then pull out this list and you hold the person up against the list and see if they match it well enough. This is really important.
Well, and that is very rational, as opposed to what some freshwater snails do, which is that when they're exposed to predators or dangerous situations, they just harden their shells and they don't panic like some people might or other species, but they do become impenetrable. And I can't say that word. And so you can't get in. They just have a thick shell and they don't let anything in. And I think some of us do that as well.
But that seems really rational. If you're being robbed, it'd be great if you could just turn your house into a hard shell. But,
well,
you
that's
know,
true.
In relationships, you really, again, you have to pre-plan your behavior. And if you're a panicker, bring me back to, I told you I get to panic, how you'll react in those situations where panic sets in, you pre-plan that. You know, when you're either going to put up a wall or go all whack job, people panic and they do either one. So consider that ahead of time. And when you're in that panic mode, catch yourself, take a step back, maybe even tell your partner that you tend to hit the panic button first and look later. And there's very interesting research by Brooke Feeney on attachment. This is how secure an emotional foundation you have. And it finds that the more secure partner, the more they help the insecure partner feel that they're loved and that the person's there for them, the more independent the insecure partner can be. And by independent, I mean emotionally strong and feeling secure in their relationship. So time-wise, well, we are almost at the end of our show. This is Amy Alcon. You've been listening to Science News You Can Use with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Join the two of us again in 2 weeks. And join Amy Alcon next week for her regular show featuring the top behavioral scientists explaining how their work can improve your life.
And don't tune out yet because there's more. Please support our work by buying our new books, Amy Alcon's Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck, and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin's Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. Dr. Jen, any final words from the animal kingdom? And I know you have them.
I do. You know, I think we have a lot of animal wisdom here. If you know someone who's hurting, be a penguin and wrap your arms around them. And if you're coming out of a breakup, think of yourself as a magpie, making room for a new partner by emotionally and maybe even physically putting that poor quality mate on the curb.